The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Well, hairdressers and barbers have been crying out for clarity around reopening in the past few weeks, and it looks like they're going to have to wait a few more days to find out if they can open on June 29th, as has been suggested. If their reopening date does get brought forward, it will come as a massive relief to mop heads with fringe fatigue all around the country, with many a kitchen scissors returned with relief to its rightful place in the cutlery drawer. We're joined by one of the country's best known hairdressers, Dylan Bradshaw. Dylan, with all the to-ing and fro-ing on the date, how do you feel the government has handled the issue so far?
I totally get, you know, at the end of the day, people's health is the most important thing, you know, at the first stage. But I do think, you know, in hindsight, and it's easy to say in hindsight, you know, but I do think personally that there probably should have been a lot more consultation from a business point of view, as in economics should have been around the table a lot earlier than just medical. And I don't want to say that sounding cold, but when I look at my colleagues around the world, around Europe, like some of the worst countries that were hit, like Italy and Spain, that lost, you know, a huge amount of people, they were back open for business after 7 weeks in the hair business. So, you know, currently at the moment, they're looking at 19-20 weeks for us if it stays at July 20th.
What might going to the hairdresser look like? What kind of preparations are you putting in place?
The only perspex we're going to use is around the reception desk, so that when people are paying or coming in to be greeted, that there's a protection face on face, and for the nail bar. But I'm keeping 2 metres apart, so we have the stations to, I have, you know, a large salon space, so I'm very lucky, not like some other salons, unfortunately, that they have a smaller space, or barbers.
So, how many stations would you have, Dylan, normally before this?
I have 60 stations in the salon. So if I just have that by taking out and keeping 2 metres space, obviously I can still take in 30 clients, obviously. And because my salon is over 5 floors, we can kind of work with that. But at the same time, we don't take it lightly. You know, my team will have masks. And what we're going to do is introduce a mask to every client that comes through the salon, so that we bin that straight after it. And the same with the, we're looking at the moment at disposable towels and gowns and all that sort of stuff that just get binned straight away after the service. And then we do deep cleanse of the space.
What's it been like for you, the lockdown, closing down the business? Have you been worried about it all?
Of course. I mean, it's a funny one, actually. If you look back on it now, I mean, I think we're closed, you know, like over 3 months. It was funny. The first week was like that, you know, that week between Christmas and New Year. So you kind of think it's like you're on your holidays. So you're eating and there's a glass of wine in your hand every night, you know. So you're going through that stage. Then the second week is like January, where you're going, I have to get fit again and I have to stop eating fatty foods and all that. That's all fine. But then what happens is then you start kind of getting a bit nervous about, God, you know, what does the future hold for us? So actually, it was funny. I was starting to get a little bit, my poor wife, I was driving them mad. I think my family wanted to give me an eviction notice at one stage. And that was only probably into week three. But I think, funny enough, the saving grace for me was just, I start going swimming, sea swimming every morning. It clears the mind and it kind of just kind of makes you feel like, actually, what am I getting stressed over? And then you kind of come back with a different, sometimes you're kind of nearly locked in your head, you know, that sort of way, because you're worried about your business, your team, your clients, trying to bring people back to work and that. And that in itself is quite pressurizing, you know. Like at the end of the day, if my business went belly up tomorrow, that's not an issue to me. I can take care of my family and I can start all over again. The big problem for me is, you know, my team. I don't want to let people down that work for me, you know.
I suppose when it comes to the pandemic, there are so many serious aspects to the whole thing. When mm-hmm. it comes to none of us being able to get a haircut, it can be kind of trivialised a little bit. And I know Micheál Martin, Fianna Fáil leader, referred to it in The Dáil when he sort of cracked a joke that some people are a bit more challenged in those areas than others. But for a lot of people, it's an important social experience and helps them with how they feel about themselves, their own confidence. They haven't had that.
I'm incredibly grateful for this, excuse me, this career. And as I get older, I understand it even more and I appreciate it even more. But, you know, I get invited into somebody's life, you know, every time they sit in that chair and they're opening up to you. So, you know, people are in their most vulnerable stage when they're sitting in a chair, because they might be lacking confidence. They might feel that they need, you know, support or moral support, even how they look or whatever. But they're opening up to you. It's a very, and it is more of a counselling session. I know people kind of can be a bit jokey about it, but lots of people have told me very personal things over their lives.
But like what? What kind of things, when people go in to get their hair done, are they going to talk about? That's
everything.
Deeply,
I mean,
personal?
Yeah, I mean, Jesus, I mean, there's lots of great joyous stuff. I mean, I've had, you know, clients have told me that they're pregnant before they tell anybody. You'll have some people that will tell you that they're, I mean, gossipy that they're having an affair. I mean, you can have some people that are telling you their first time that they've just found out that they have cancer, and then you have to talk about a plan and how to look after them, you know, post and pre-treatment, you know.
There's no training for that.
No. And I think the secret of it is to learn to listen. You know, there's a psychological about it, like putting somebody's hand on their shoulder is more powerful than any words. You can get a stranger that walks in off the street that can tell you anything. I mean, I've had people that come in and have told me about they're in an abusive relationship, you know. And you try and support people the best you can.
What do you say when something like that? Somebody you don't really know tells you something like that?
Some people want to ask you because they just feel that they can't go to a friend. They can't go to a family member. So they're asking you, in a sense, to gauge, you know, what should they do? I'm here to help you, to support you, if there's anything you need. And, like, I think a lot of people in our industry, that's what we do. Mental health is a big, big issue, right, in this country. And it has turned over like twofold, fourfold, whatever, in these past, you know, short period of time of these years, and especially these months now, because people have been, if you like, locked away a lot. It's a great outlet for people, you know, to kind of come in and to just let everything out. And for the people that stand behind the chair as well.
Somebody in your job, inevitably, you end up walking down the street and looking at people's hair, mm-hmm. men or women, and say, yeah. God, that's desperate. Who did that? That yeah. person, they really should get a haircut. What are you saying now where none of us can go get a haircut?
Why am I wearing a cap? I mean, I look like David Hasselhoff's love child here. I mean, I haven't had a haircut like everybody else. I'm laughing. I'm laughing at people texting me or messaging me on social media talking about how bad of a hair day they're having. I'm having the worst. And I own the bloody business.
What about black market hairdressing? I mean, there have been reports that people have
blown
gone
up.
Into it.
And that was another thing. I personally think that the government kind of shot themselves in the foot and did damage to our industry. Like, I don't want to harp on about it, but the problem is that, like, I have to shut my business for a long period of time, like so many people in my industry. But then people are opening their doors to let people in to come do the hair and then go on to the next place and the next place and the next place. And not only that, we're still at a stage now where it's like this week we're told, oh, we're back. Actually, we're not back. We'll decide again next week. But keep kicking the can down the thing.
Well, do you think that obviously before the pandemic, there was an element of black market?
Sorry,
hairdressing
black
going
market
on
was
into the
huge,
going home.
Because it gives you a shot in the arm.
But during the pandemic, then how widespread do you think it is? I mean, you a guy like you can probably spot somebody who's had their hair done.
Guys, I mean, it's so easy. Like, I'm like, first of all, there's presenters on TV programs, let's say, that you can see that their hair is freshly done. We had our
wives, husbands,
yeah,
maybe?
Both, we'll just say,
they,
right?
We had the wife or the husband.
I won't mention names. We had a few leaders as well that were on the TV every day on the news talking about lockdown when they had fresh haircuts. I thought it was ironic, to be honest. Where they're telling us to shut our businesses, but somebody's obviously come to their home to cut their hair.
You don't think it was a family member or anything, no?
Unless your family member is a child that's been on YouTube for the last 3 months to learn the skill of cutting hair. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a bit of a funny one. It's been a lot about mixed messages about it. Look, the thing is, I hope we've learned an awful lot to move on. But the black market has been huge.
How did you get into hairdressing in the first place?
So my mum got me the job. It's a funny one, you know? I was in school up the road, actually, in Oatlands and Christian Brothers. And I probably wasn't getting on great in school, which actually I wasn't getting on great in school. And I was very involved with the sports, but academically I was failing pretty bad. And years later, I find out that I have dyslexia, you know. So that was a massive problem for me. I mean, when I did my intercert at the time, out of the year, three of us failed our intercert, and that I was one of them. I had three passes. I'll never forget that cycle home. It was the worst cycle to try and tell my mother, because I was the eldest, so this was the first time. So that was the problem for me.
And it becomes very difficult for you to know that that is the problem.
Yeah, because you, like, you live in your own head. You, it's not something you talk to. There's no you're told you're stupid. That's the way it worked, you know. Like, you're told, Bradshaw, you're stupid. Get out. You're not doing your homework. And now, I never did my homework because it was literally like, and people don't realize it. The only way I could describe it with people is it's like you're going in every day and everybody speaks a different language around you, okay? And you can't understand the language because you're not, you know, you're reading it, but you're not understanding it. My mum had said to me at the time, would you not think of maybe doing like a trade? And in the old days, that's what you know, was given. So she said, would you be interested in doing hairdressing? I'll never forget when she told me, I was like going, what, hairdressing? That's for girls, you know? It was like, and gay men, like, I've no interest in something like that. Are you mad? Anyway, months go on and...
What age were you? That's
I was 15, I think, probably 14 or 15. I went up to the salon. I used to go to the barbers literally twice a year to get like sheared like a sheep. I hadn't a strand of fashion in my head, right? I was no interest in any of that stuff. My mum said to me, well, go up to Peter Mark in Dunleary Shopping Centre, you know, where she used to go, and my hairdresser will give you a haircut today. Now, wear a shirt and look smart. And I was like, Jesus, this is all a bit fancy for me. So I went up and got a haircut, and I remember sitting in the salon. It's very funny. In the old days, you'd get an escalator up and you could... I mean, I can even visualise it, or I can even get the sense, the smell. You'd get the smell of the salon before you even saw it, because it was perm lotion, which was basically like industrial muck in those days, right? It was just this incredibly awful smell, right? And you would come up to the salon and there's this energy, like before you even get to the doors, because it was the shopping centre, so you could hear it before you even see it, and the smell. And then you get to the door and then suddenly there's this high-end energy and the music's pumping and there's queues of people everywhere. And then it was like, I'm a 15-year-old boy and I just like, the mouth was kind of hanging open looking at these girls working in the salon.
And that did it for you.
Well, I went in, got a haircut, and then guy says to me, oh, listen, the manager wants to have a chat with you. And I was like, oh, okay. And he comes over and he says, oh, I believe you want to be a hairdresser. Your mum was in yesterday and she said you'd like to take a part-time job. And it's so funny. There was literally that moment where everything stopped and I was that close to saying, no, thanks. And only because there was beautiful looking women in the salon. Because I was in a Christian Brothers, so we didn't really mix with the girls, you know. We went in and was like, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to give it a go.
So when you started off hairdressing, it's not an easy job. It requires
it's a
lot of interest, a lot of energy. You're on your feet. It's
yeah. And you have to do a lot of crap as well, you know. I mean, like, the first day I started, they gave me a spanner and said there's six chairs in the back broken there, so see if you can do anything with them. And I put the chairs together. I mean, it's like, hairdressing, okay. This is hairdressing. I remember, you know, but I didn't care because... The great thing about my mum was the work ethic was it didn't matter if you swept the floor, you made sure you swept it better than everybody else. You make an impact on people and you make an impact on your job and to show people that you know, you can do your best.
Was your mum enterprising or your dad or was it in the family?
Yeah, I mean, my parents broke up when I was 12 and, you know, so my mum kind of really looked after the four of us. She was on her own with us. So my youngest brother was 2. We were all 3 years apart. So it was a lot for her to take on. She worked bloody hard. She was gone early in the mornings, working late at night.
And was she working for herself?
Yeah, so she kind of started off, you know, she had a business, you know, my dad, he'd butcher business and she had a deli and then that kind of fell apart. You know, obviously they broke up, but then she kind of opened up... down in Dunleary, she had a restaurant, a part of a hotel that she kind of ran that and it was hers. And she had a catering company that she ran from home. And this was kind of in the 80s when catering companies weren't that kind of posh, you know.
Had you thought about at an early stage having your own business and your own salon? Or were you just interested in saying, look, you know, because with hairdressing, you can travel the world.
Yeah, look, I mean, so like it's honest to God, it's been the best thing in the world for me. I mean, on so many levels. I mean, when I was younger, in different people you'd meet, I wouldn't be as proud to say that you were a hairdresser. I mean, I was very proud to be a hairdresser, but you'd be very conscious because it's one of those things that you kind of go, oh, you didn't do well in school or you were limited with it. And it's kind, we don't do ourselves any favors as an industry. I think we sell ourselves a little short. So my whole drive really with the industry was, for me and my business, was to kind of make it much more respected.
There's a lot of pressure that the customer isn't happy, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm one of these guys who goes in to get a haircut, and as I've got older, it's a shorter visit every 12 months or so. But if somebody did something and they did it, I didn't really like the way it was, and they'd say, is that okay? And I'd say, yeah, that's fine.
Such an Irish thing, isn't it?
And then I'd walk out and I'd say, oh, I'm not going back to that guy again, right? That's the truth. But lots of other people are going to say, No, you've made a complete hames of this. I mean, there's a lot of pressure, isn't it?
Do you know what's hard is, like, I suppose the thing is, it's all about expectation here, you know? And that's the thing about consultation, you know, when you're having a chat with somebody, you've got to make sure that you're on both the same wavelength before you even pick that scissors up.
Have you ever had any big meltdowns, no?
Oh, yeah.
From customers?
I've had meltdowns where I've, over the years, but nothing over dramatic. I've had people who I've had to, I think I've thrown three people out of the salon in my career.
What do they do?
I just can't stand people who talk to people like, you know, like they're dirt. That is my no-go area. It's like if I'm going for dinner and we have the kids out for dinner. If my kids don't look at that person who served them a plate of food and thank them with honesty, like a genuine honesty, I'll get thick with the kids. We're in the service industry and have respect for the people that do it. If there's a problem, we can fix the problem. But it doesn't give you the right to talk to people like shit.
Have you had people come in and they want the impossible?
All the time. But that's part of being, you know.
I want to look like that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't turn around and say to somebody, God, you look terrible. This is no chance you're going to look like this. That would be an awful way to. But what you do is you go, yeah, but I've got a really good idea and I know I can make this look better for you.
You've done celebrity hair. You've done Bono's hair.
Yeah.
No pressure there.
Not at all. I'm incredibly lucky for my job. I've travelled the world. I mean, I've done MTV Awards, you know, I've done Globes, I've done amazing actors, actresses, you know, supermodels. I mean,
you've seen U2's hair change over the decades, the different styles.
Sweet Jesus, yeah. Yeah. There's been a few, thankfully I haven't been responsible for, but in all things, I mean, we all go through different phases and stuff in what we do.
Annie Lennox.
Oh, yeah.
Cut her hair.
Yeah, she's an amazing woman. I've actually looked after her a couple of times when she's been in town. But there was a funny time. The very first time I looked after her, I was summoned over to the the Marion Hotel, and I went up to her room and knocked on the door, and she greeted me with silence, you know. And it was like she was trying to words in silence. And I was like, I haven't a clue what you're saying. So this is the first time I met this woman. She's trying to tell me what way to style her hair. So she had to write it all down because she was on voice rest.
So she wouldn't speak to give the voice a break.
Yeah, now she was a very nice person, but she just was giving her voice a break, so she wouldn't speak. So it's an interesting one to try to do a consultation with somebody that you've never met before, that probably is going to be looked at by 15, 20,000 people that evening through, you know, like the power of written on a notepad, you know. So, it's been funny. I mean, I did a video with you two one Sunday. One of the scenes was they did the song on a flatbed truck, you know, the going from Harlem, and then we were going through Times Square, and because I'm grooming the guys, it was a bit breezy, so I had to sit on the flat truck. So it's the four band, all the speakers, driving through with 50,000-60,000 people chasing through the truck, and all the papers took the photos, and the next day it was in the papers. You could see Bradshaw hunkered down beside the speaker. So it's, you find yourself in some of the most bizarre setups, but it's been great, and you know, I love it.
You obviously learned a lot, Dylan, from your mom about work ethic and about business and how to make things work. And does she ever remind you that she was the one that got you that job or landed you the job to start you?
Well, she's an Irish mammy, for God's sake. So, you know, they're as subtle as a boot in the back of the head. You know, that sort of way for my mum. I was on the way in, and I have my son in with me, Oscar, and we're on the way into the salon, and we were in the car, and she was on the speakerphone, and you know, she was lecturing him after lecturing me. So, yeah, no, she's well capable of telling me that. How she started me off. I know, but she has on so many levels, and it's terrible to, you know, to say it. I mean, as you get older, you appreciate it a lot more, you know. You can understand why she was right all these times when most of the time you're telling her she was wrong.
Why they're always right. Dylan Bradshaw, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.